You are listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. Chapter 30, Wren. As Wren propelled herself into the air, nullifying the ward on Lithril's door for the second time that evening, she wondered what exactly she was playing at. This was not her fight, yet she had volunteered. She had given them the journal, warned them of the situation, helped translate the working. After that, she could have stepped away. She should have stepped away. They were the ones that had decided to go deeper into the lion's den instead of running away like any sane person. And yet, she was still here, running off to face the lions right along with them. Wren landed in a graceful crouch in front of the door. 9 seconds. Still not her best, but certainly not bad. She twisted the knob and pushed the door open with a little flourish as the chalk lines glowed and hovered above her head.
"Very impressive,"
Travox said in a slow purr as he walked through the door, eyeing the center markings and the ribbons of light.
"Your original work."
"Yes," Wren answered. His words made her back go stiff. She did not know what was more troubling. The slow, hissing cadence of Travok's voice, or the fact that he had just willingly complimented the work he was so determined to ignore earlier that evening. The blessing had not stuck, that much was clear. What had happened to Travok's mind after Zithril's mental strike? Was it just his speech that had gotten changed, or was there something more?
"Are you all right? That was quite a blow Zithril gave you earlier,"
Wren asked in a voice loud enough to be heard by the entire group.
"Oh, I'm tip-top and ready for action,"
he replied with an equally loud voice and a mocking little bounce in his step. He gave Wren a smirk that made her inside shiver before saying,
"Your prince was just loosening me up."
"I think," she started, but as soon as Zvara squeezed through the door, the giant was talking.
"Come on, it's time to go. We've wasted enough time,"
he said, pushing Wren towards the stairs. She showed them to Lithril's room and opened the door without ceremony.
"After you, my noble knights," Wren said, stepping aside.
Brenora's normally stoic features gave a twitch of amusement.
"You first, you renegade rogue."
"Absolutely not," Wren laughed.
"Refuse me again, girl, and you'll wish you hadn't,"
Brenora said in a quiet whisper that made Wren feel thunder down her neck.
"You're a useful sort of woman, Wren, and we could use all the help we can get tonight, but I have not made up my mind if I can trust you at my back. And until I have, you'll be going first down every stair and up every hall. Now, you can either descend these stairs on your own, or Varys can throw you down."
"Right," the thought thief grumbled through gritted teeth as she turned to the stairs. The steps were shallow and slick as they twisted like a corkscrew, following the vein of power down into the depths beneath Altair. The light was dim, and the air smelt like water and secrets. Every sound, every drip, every scuff of feet against every step of stairs echoed in her ears and danced across her spine. There was the pulse of power here, as steady as the heartbeat in her head. It felt like sand being pulled over her skin, fizzy with an itch she could taste in the back of her throat. Down the staircase pulled her. Down, down, down. At last the stairs ended in a short hall and a doorway that danced with purple-gray light. Wren signaled for the group behind her to stay silent and hold back as she crept forward to investigate. The room beyond was massive, at least as large as the ballroom Wren's evening had begun in, with a high, echoing ceiling and rocks that looked like they were being pulled down to the earth. Torches and servants lined the walls as hairline cracks spread like spiders' webs across the cave, pulsing violet. She inched back away from the opening and up the stairs to rejoin the others. "It is a large cave, about 400 feet wide. Seraphina is in the center of the room, chained to what looks like a metal stake. Lithril and the king are maybe 200 feet away from her by the eastern wall. There's a cluster of rocks about 50 feet to the left of the door. My suggestion is we make for those and push forward from there.
How many people?
Faris asked, doing a passable imitation of a whisper. I counted 30 servants, plus Lithril and the king, but I would not be surprised if there were more. There's an opening at the northern end of the cavern, and anything could be down those tunnels. Can the servants be saved? Brenor asked. Or are they already gone? Rin bit her lip in thought, and looked at Trevok for confirmation of what she suspected. The wizard gave no answers, just smiled at her in a way that made her want to turn invisible. It is hard to say, Rin said at last. Perhaps a skilled soul healer could do something, but unless Lithril has saved their memories, I doubt there is anything anyone could do. When the princess dies, they might be able to breathe on their own, but not much else. Husks, Brenora asked, and Rin nodded. At that, Varys turned and started to walk down the hall, picking up speed with each teeth-rattling step.
Stay on my heels, he called over his shoulder. I'm going to Seraphina.
Wait,
hissed Brenora, but it was too late. Varys was done waiting, done listening. He burst through the door like a boulder rolling down a hill, the unstoppable force of gravity pulling him forward and dragging everyone else along with him. 5 bodies launched themselves at him the instant he was through the door, clawing at his face, hanging from his neck, biting at his ear, and then they were gone, tossed aside like stones skipping across a pond. Brenora, Trevok, and Rin spilled from the door. The queen grabbed the bow at her back as Rin let her knives drop into her hands. They moved forward as one, chasing after Varys, who was drawing the fight to him, wading through a sea of flesh and bone to get to Seraphina. Lithril's servants swarmed over the giant like ants over sugar. Varys did not seem to mind. The golem batted the pests away one after another, continuing his steady march forward towards his goal. However, Rin could see the giant slipping, missing the man that leapt for his front because he was having to contend with the woman on his back, blocking a blow of the axe but missing the graze of the knife. And there were still more, enough to drive Rin, the queen, and Trevok back into hiding behind a grouping of boulders. Brenora dealt 2 death blows with her axe as Rin plunged her knife into a man's neck, clearing the way for their retreat.
Damn it,
Brenora swore, picking up her bow again and taking aim at the stragglers as the horde began to close around Varys.
Trevok, clear a path, she yelled over her shoulder.
Working on it now, my queen,
replied the wizard. The words, my queen, felt like a slur, not a title. Rin looked up at Trevok from her position on the floor, and her blood ran cold. The frustrated but focused look he had worn as he puzzled over spells was gone, replaced by an expression of gleeful malice that did not belong on the man's face. It was too big, somehow, like a man trying to squeeze into a too small shirt. He had taken up a fencer's stance behind the queen, his back to Rin, his face in profile, one hand reaching in front of him forming a claw, the other making circles in the air. Then she saw it, the telltale glimmer of power winding its way between Trevok's fingers. He was like an old woman spinning yarn, pulling the nearly invisible threads from the air and winding them into a ball in his hand. Varys cried out in pain, and Rin risked a glance over the rock just in time to see the giant falter again. Little wisps of energy came off him, evaporating like steam and drifting back in the direction of their hiding spot.
Any time now, Trevok!
Brenora thundered as she took aim at 3 of the thralls at Varys' back.
Almost there,
the wizard hissed. Rin looked at Trevok and fought to keep her mouth from falling open. He was not pulling power from the air. He was stealing it from Varys. Rin swallowed against the terror in her throat as she gawked at the absolute insanity she saw dancing in his eyes, at the hatred that seeped from his smile, and the large ball of force and power he had aimed at the back of the queen's head. That was not the face of the man she had teased and tormented. That was not the man who had judged and belittled her. Those were not the eyes that had squinted over texts and codes moments before. This was the face of the monster that had trapped her in the hall, at last stepping fully into the light and coming out to play. Rin did not have time to question her assumptions, only to act. As swift and smooth as a dance, she moved behind him. Then, before he could notice her, before she could doubt herself, she brought the handle of her dagger down hard on the back of Turok's head. He dropped like a stone, sending his spell flying into the ceiling. Rin threw herself over the wizard's body to protect the unconscious man from falling debris. The battering ram of force and power that had been meant for Brenora crashed into the rocks and rubble around them, shaking the world to its knees. Dust filled the air, and a rumbling filled her ears. It was not till the ground had settled that Rin even noticed Brenora on top of her, holding up Turok's bag like a shield.
"What was that?"
she whispered. Then, before Rin could answer,
"Shh! Do you yield, Nisia? You do seem to be getting tired,"
Letherell's high and charming voice called. Brenora and Rin peeked over the rocks for a better look. A ring of dispatched men and women surrounded Varys, while still more servants stood at attention between him and Serafina. The princess stood on a stone pedestal, a blue silk robe draped over her body, black curls spilling down her back, a wicked knife in her hand as her nearly naked father knelt in front of her.
"Serafina, are you all right?"
Varys panted, sword held at the guard position, glaring at the sorceress in front of him. Serafina did not answer. Her body sagged against the post at her back, then arched and writhed as violet sparks shot from her neck.
"Surrender,"
Varys growled. Lythra laughed.
"I was about to tell you to do the same thing.
If you give up now, your death will be quick. I will not make you watch her die."
"Never,"
Varys said through gritted teeth.
"Last chance. This is about to get much worse."
"Let her go now."
"I warned you,"
the princess chuckled. Then the girl, who was as beautiful as the moon, opened her arms and tipped her head back. The wide sleeves of her robe looked like the wings of a terrible bird as she called out,
"A troll, now!"
Lithril's command danced around the room, around the rocks and the fallen bodies, as all of them held their breath, waiting for a response. But none came. The princess's head jerked up.
"A troll?"
she said, her voice snapping through the air like a whip. Still no one answered. For a moment, the mad ruler of Althea stood on her throne, alone, lost as her eyes roamed the room, begging for friends and allies that were not coming. Then her face split, cracking open and releasing hot, furious tears. She shrieked, and Rin recognized the call of a defeated soul. She heard it with her heart. She knew what it sounded like when someone was about to burn the world down. Lithril spun the dagger in her hand, bringing the point down into the hollow of the king's neck. She dragged the knife across his throat, and Rin braced herself for the gore, but it never came. Purple smoke began to pour from the hole in the king's throat, billowing out like storm clouds on the sea as lightning cracked through the air. The princess laughed, pushing the smoke forward as her servants advanced on Varys.
"Death's empty eyes, what happened?"
Brenora yelled, looking back at Turok.
"I think a rock hit him, and whatever spell he had been holding went wide,"
Rin lied, not wanting to test Brenora's trust in the middle of a battle. The queen made a sound that reminded Rin of a boiling teapot, as her head traveled from the wizard to the melee at the center of the room and back to Turok.
"Can you shoot?"
she asked with a grunt, pushing her bow and quiver into Rin's arms.
"Do you trust me at your back?"
Rin half stuttered, half laughed, staring at the weapons in her hands. Necessity, Brenora bit out, before repeating, can you shoot? In answer, Rin loosed two arrows in rapid succession, both finding homes in the soft, lethal places of their targets. That'll do, the queen said, before vaulting over the rocks and running into battle. What was chaos before turned into pandemonium. Brenora and Baris stood back to back, slashing and chopping and ducking and throwing faster than Rin could comprehend. Still, there were more bodies, more servants, a never-ending flood of people crashing over the heads of the heroes of Rin's childhood stories, threatening to drown them and drag them all into the black depths of the unknown. How could there still be this many people? Rin silently wondered as she continued to fire. How many people had this woman destroyed? And where were they all coming from? Then something caught her eye. A man stumbled this way and that, drunkenly weaving his way back towards the center of the fight, an arrow lodged in his back. Rin blinked in disbelief, but then she turned her head. There was a woman, pushing herself away from the wall, an arrow sticking through her neck. Rin shook her head and tried to catch her breath as she counted the servants with fletchling feathers sprouting from their chests. This is impossible, she said, even as she took aim at a woman running at Varys's legs. Impossible, she muttered, and loosed the arrow, knowing there was only one way to be sure. Impossible, she repeated, as the woman fell, and Rin began to count, hoping she had been wrong. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Rin counted in her mind, eyes fixed to the lifeless body of the woman. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. She was deaf to the fight around her, her vision shrunk to a 6-foot circle, her attention on the corpse she just created. 11, 12, 13. The woman twitched, then squirmed. Then, Lithril's former servant pushed herself to her feet in a jerky fit of movement.
Shit!
Rin screeched, spinning around and sliding down to the floor. She pulled her knees to her chest and pressed her back into the rock as she raked fingers through her hair. A necromancer. A creation-be-damned necromancer. How were they supposed to fight this? How were they supposed to survive this? How long before Varys collapsed from exhaustion and Brenora was overwhelmed with an opponent that could not die? How long till they came for her? They needed a wizard. Rin eyed Trevok's body for a half-breath more before reaching her decision. She dug a rope out from her bag, bound his hands, then, placing fingers on either side of his temples, she dove into his mind. Chapter 31. Rin. Hello? Rin called into the dark, empty room. Nothing answered her, not even the echoes of her own voice. She groaned in frustration. Time worked differently in the mind, but she did not have the minutes to waste searching for wayward wizards in the mazes of his own thoughts. Muttering curses, she pulled a candle from her pocket and blew on the wick till it came to life. The light barely illuminated the granite cobblestones at her feet, the darkness pressing in like fog, threatening to suffocate the little flame. Rin rolled her eyes and called again. Hello? Trevok? This time, a muffled groan reached her ears. Trevok, do that again, she commanded, inching her way towards the progressively more frustrated grunts, till at last the toe of a boot came into sight. Trevok? She asked tentatively, raising her light and trying to shoo some of the ever-pressing dark away with her hand. There he was, black hair tangled around his face, hands and feet bound, lying on his side with a gag in his mouth.
Trevok, thank the gods,
Rin cried, falling to her knees beside him, removing the cloth.
Rin? What happened? Where are we?
The question shot out of his mouth the second the gag was gone.
Right now, we are in your mind. You were incapacitated during the fight with the princess. Physically, we are in a cave beneath Altair, battling Lithril, who is completely outclassing us. I came in here to pull you back into the fight.
This is not my mind,
Trevok said,
looking around at the black as Rin sawed at the ropes around his feet.
I assure you it is, Rin replied in frustration. Why did you make these ropes so thick? Why tie yourself up at all?
I assure you I did not tie myself up. And I guarantee you that this is not my mind. It looks nothing like my mind. Where is the wall?
What? Is this place bigger than you expected?
Rin groaned.
Did you just call me stupid?
If you are having to ask that question, I think you have your answer. She smirked and finished cutting through the ties at his ankles. A sound like a house being torn from its roots crashed around the empty room. Trevok and Rin froze, a pair of rabbits scenting a fox. Then, as if dawn was breaking at the end of a long corridor, white light, clean and painful, blossomed at the end of the hall. However, this was not the cheerful beginning to a new day. No, this light was a storm. It pulled itself forward with giant claws made of crystal starlight beams, crunching the stone of the floor beneath its weight as it flew at the two mortals in a rage. It was illumination and destruction. The room became clearer as it passed. Armchairs, bookcases, ladders caught in the light and then destroyed in the storm.
Rin, what is that?
Shit,
she hissed, wondering how many times she would be saying that tonight as she started to saw furiously at the bonds around the wizard's hands.
Rin?
Trevok asked, his voice trembling with the question. She did not answer. She did not look back. She could see the shadows starting to stretch out in front of her. She knew her time was running out.
Faster, Rin,
Trevok barked.
I'm trying, she snapped, as her knife started to fray the final strand. Rin!
Almost there!
Now, Rin, now! The candle, burn it, now!
She did not question. She did not hesitate. She did not talk back. She took the candle and thrust the flame between his hands. The heat snapped the rope, and he pulled his hands free, pushing Rin to the floor as the light crashed around them. She slammed her eyes shut and clawed at the ground, bracing for the inevitable. They were a pebble in an avalanche, a leaf in a hurricane, a sliver of driftwood lost at sea. She was small. They were both so very small, and this was... But the inevitable never came. Rin blinked her eyes open and stared at her hands, trembling against the speckled gray floor. Shaking, she turned her gaze up at a miracle. The furious river of light was tearing at the world around them, washing it away in a never-ending deluge of power. But they were safe. The light flowed over them, around them, keeping them in a small circle of safety as the blinding energy roared in their ears. Rin stared in amazement at the man in front of her, at his straining arms and grimacing face. He was holding it back. As impossible as it was, he was holding this power back. The light gnashed at his defenses, and he strained against that power. But he did not falter. He did not waver. His long hair and the blue-green robe of Durandir whipped around him, caught in some non-existent breeze. He was a knight fighting a demon. He was strength and determination. Rin's mind boggled at the amount of will it would take to hold something like this at bay. The grit, the sheer tenacity, the mental capacity, it...
What in the ignoble name of death is this thing?
Trevok snarled over his shoulder. Rin shook herself into action.
How in thought's name should I know? This is your mind. Drive it back. I am making us a door. Drive it back?
He shouted, as his feet slipped a few inches closer to Rin's leg.
This is your mind, Trevok. You are the master here. Drive it back!
She yelled over her shoulder as she scrambled for a piece of chalk in her pocket and started sketching a rough square on the ground.
Rin!
I'm working as fast as I can,
she said, finishing her square, throwing the chalk aside, waiting for the door to come to life. But it never did. The square just sat there, as lifeless as the rocks she had drawn it on.
I can't!
Yes, you can! Do it now!
She screamed, fighting off panic as she kicked and pushed at the floor, begging it to open through her terror. A roar ripped through her. A sound filled with primal power. It boomed at her back, pushing her onto her hands as it filled the room like a wave, forcing the light out, back, away from them. An oak door sputtered to life at her feet. With one hand, Rin pushed it open, and with the other, she reached shaking fingers for the hem of Trevok's cloak. He was still yelling, still howling in rage and resolve, bending his head back and clenching his fist as he released a pain and fury that felt all too familiar to Rin's mind. Rin's fingers closed around the robe, and she allowed them to ride that power back into the physical world. The force of their exit sent Rin flying back, her head cracking against the stone floor of reality. She did not care. She did not have time for pain, only survival.
That was impressive, she laughed, crawling over to Trevok and pulling the wizard into a sitting position.
What was that?
He gasped, before looking down at his still bound hands.
What did I do?
Nothing that cannot be undone and nothing anyone needs to know about,
Rin reassured him. Lithril is practicing necromancy.
Necromancy?
He asked, wrinkling his nose and sniffing the air.
This does not have the same feel as... Let me look.
He pushed himself to his feet and hobbled to peek over the rock.
Shit!
He swore, dropping into a crouch at Rin's side.
Funny, that was my response, she scoffed.
That is not necromancy.
Trevok delivered the news like he was pronouncing a death sentence.
But the bodies, they are...
Rin groped around dumbly for the right words.
The bodies are not staying dead because there is too much raw power in the air. Can't you feel it?
Trevok hissed in frustration, bringing his bound hands up to pinch the bridge of his nose and rub his face. Rin looked at her arms, at the hairs standing on end. She ran her tongue over the roof of her mouth and wondered at the strange prickling sensation she felt there. Until that moment, she had thought it was just the fear that was meant to keep her alive.
Nothing would be able to stay dead in all this.
Trevok waved his hand through the air, and indigo lightning sparked at his fingertips.
The bodies are just following the last command that they had been given in life.
Well, at least it's only accidental necromancy.
Rin laughed, but Trevok glowered.
This is worse than necromancy.
Worse than a horde of the undead that we have no chance of beating? Rin asked, her voice sounding distant in the maelstrom of activity just on the other side of the rock.
More catastrophic,
Trevok corrected himself.
She appears to be trying to complete the summoning on her own.
I don't,
Rin started, then shook her head, purple light crackling at the ends of her hair.
Without three people to perform the summoning, won't the spell just fail?
It will fail, spectacularly. Most likely in a big explosion that will destroy everything from here to Whitesilver. Or maybe we will all just get turned into our favorite pastry. This much unharnessed magic can be a bit unpredictable.
Trevok sighed, leaning his head back against the stone they were both cowering behind.
Rin felt her mouth go dry and sticky. Sometimes she felt like she lived her entire life in tight corners.
Budgeting food with Rita, jumping from one job to the next, skittering over rooftops and back alleys. However, there was something in the way the wizard said it, the way he looked up at the ceiling of this god's forsaken cave, that made her all too aware of the absurdity of the situation. Of her in a cave, hiding behind a boulder as heroes and warriors fought to save the life of a maiden from a story as a witch queen raised the dead around them. It was ridiculous, but not as ridiculous as dying would be.
I am not dying tonight, and I am not being turned into a croissant.
Croissant, hmm? I was thinking that I would make a nice eclair.
Trevok interrupted.
I am not dying tonight, so tell me what needs to be done to avoid that.
Trevok wiped another hand over his face, little bits of dust and rock clinging to his hair and beard.
We would have to ground the magic, harness it, and give it back to the earth.
He sighed.
Is grounding different from balancing?
She asked, reaching for her chalk and scribbling in a mad dash on the rock at their backs.
Balancing is what you do when you are holding the power ready for a spell. Grounding is when you collect excess power and then disperse it. But yes, they operate around the same principles.
Grounding like a lightning strike,
Rin said, her hand cramping with the speed of her writing.
Essentially, yes, you gather the power and then send it down through your hand or a staff or
a giant metal stake in the ground? Travok stopped to look at her like she was a madwoman. For a moment, Rin wondered what she must look like. Black paint scraped across her eyes, dust in her hair, exhaustion twitching at the corners of her mouth. But she did not care. She might look insane. She might be insane. But she was right.
Rin, wait just a moment. That would kill her.
Sorry, you were just acting like we were all already dead, so I thought it might not matter.
There is accepting defeat, and then there is knowingly sending a storm of power down on an innocent woman's head.
But we could do it, right? She asked in a manic plea. We could change the marks around Seraphina, change the purpose of the spell, gather the power, and then ground it.
How did you remember all this?
The wizard asked, squinting at the scribblings she had made on the rock. Absently, almost compulsively, he took the chalk from her hand to change and correct a few of the symbols.
There, that should work. Oh, that's rather pretty,
he said, tipping his head to one side and squinting at their finished working. Then, in a disgusted shudder, he remembered who she was and what she was proposing.
I am not going to kill Seraphina,
he said, with a voice that told Rin she would not be allowed to kill Seraphina either. She won't die. Not if I can pick the locks and get her free of the circle. Travok threw his head back and laughed.
You want to go running off into that? Change a spell that you do not fully understand in that? It is a miracle you can even remember all this in the first place. And then what? Hopefully pull Seraphina free in time before you're both roasted alive?
No, I want us to go running off into that. Travok said nothing, just swallowed and licked his lips. So she continued, You're right. I do not understand magic the way you do, and I will not be able to do everything in time, but together we could do this.
But,
Travok started, small and timid. Why was he hesitating? Rin thought in frustration. Travok was many things, but he was not a coward. She had seen him. She knew what he could do. And then he glanced at the ropes around his wrists, and she understood.
Can I be trusted?
He asked, bright red shame creeping up his neck. He genuinely did not know. And just as surprisingly, he was just as genuinely asking for her opinion. She wondered how many of his actions he remembered. Was it all a blank? Was it just him in a dark room till she cut his bonds and pulled him through a door? Or did he remember stealing life from his friend and wanting to kill his queen? Whatever he remembered, the image of him standing over her, protecting her from that assaulting power would be burned into her mind for the rest of her life. I trust you, for whatever that's worth. But only you can say if you trust yourself, Rin said, staring into his blue-gray eyes. All I can tell you is that right now, you are needed. Chapter 32. Varys. Varys never knew when to quit. It was easy to ignore fatigue and push past injuries when his body was being pulled forward by the momentum of his own rage. Still, all he had to do was look at Brenora's snarling and sweating face to know that he would be feeling the pain of battle in the morning.
Next time, you wait for us to come up with a plan,
she wheezed, red-faced and tired. They stood back to back, catching their breath as the circle of costumed servants closed in around them.
Would there be less of them if I had waited 5 more minutes? I'm counting 30 over here, by the way,
he panted.
20 for me,
she said, voice hollow with focus.
Are they staying down for you?
No.
The single syllable felt heavy as it fell from his lips. His eyes strayed towards Seraphina. She swayed on her feet, thrashing against her bonds one moment, drooping and gasping for air the next, a light pulsing just beneath her skin. Ink painted her face and what he could see of her body, strange sharp symbols that darted in and out of the loose-fitting robe she was wearing. But she was alive, he reminded himself.
She was alive, and bruises would heal. She was alive, and she was going to stay that way.
What is she waiting for?
He growled, looking at the blank faces standing still and ready.
Are you going to keep me waiting all night?
He yelled at the princess. She didn't so much as look up from her work. Lithril stayed hunched over her father's body, pulling the writhing purple smoke from his severed neck as violet and indigo lights whipped around her swift, claw-like hands. He screamed with frustration and fear at the princess, at the army of mindless servants, at the four themselves, at anyone who would listen. The sound ripped from him, an animal roar that shook the dust from the roof and made the pebbles at his feet dance. Nothing. The princess didn't pause, the thralls didn't flinch, the gods stayed silent. Then, an answering yell bounced down the tunnel. A barking cry pulled Varus's head towards the opening of the cave. Three marchands de nuit prowled down the hall towards them, snapping and drooling with excitement.
Death take me now, Brenora sighed.
One of the beasts started to run, a playful lope that soon turned into a true charge. Varus always thought it was funny what you noticed in a fight. Some things went by in a blur, little snippets of action that your mind had no time to process. And some things were frozen forever in your memory. The burn of a knife, the arch of Serafina's body caught in the light, the salt tang of his sweat on his upper lip. It was like that when the marchand took flight. Through the smoke and flickering lights the creature came, its fur, brown and patchy, rubbed away in places to reveal bloody skin and white bone. Its teeth, sharp, cutting through its upper lip in a grotesque smile, and its eyes. Its eyes were dark, empty pools of madness, placed there by a woman who had stolen this creature's mind and was now forcing Varus to take its life. Varus bent his knees and raised his sword, preparing for the cutting claws and gnashing teeth. Instead, heat flew up his back as flames engulfed the marchand de nuit and formed a wall around him and Brenora.
Get to the stake!
Travok shouted, fire shooting from his hand as Rin ran behind him. Varus watched the young woman jump onto a man's shoulders, drive a knife into the hollow of his collar, and ride his body to the floor. Casually, she reached back and severed the tendons of the man's ankles before darting past, yelling, "Quickly!" in a cheerful invitation. With the barricade of bodies gone, Varus flew to Serafina's side, Brenora close on his heels. His hands reached out to cup her face, smudging the dirt and ink on her skin, worrying at the collar at her throat.
Serafina?
He asked, soft voice becoming harder the longer she didn't answer.
She's not moving. Why isn't she moving?
Working on it. Hold her up, Rin snapped as she fiddled with the lock at Serafina's neck. The light continued to throb in time to her heartbeat, little diamonds that danced across the ink on her skin. A moment later, she sagged in his arms, still unconscious, breath coming in ragged gasps.
Lie her down, Rin commanded. Start breaking the symbols on her body. It might help her wake up on her own.
Varus did as he was told, gently cleaning Serafina's face with the hem of his shirt, dimly aware of Travok encircling them in a wall of scorching protection.
I will be quick. Those flames will not last forever,
Travok said.
Lithril is channeling a dangerous amount of power into this room. If she is not stopped, the results could be devastating. Rin proposed that we change the spell along the outside of the circle to ground the power Lithril is calling forth, thus saving all our lives, and probably everyone else's as well.
Varus felt the shocked pause at his back. Then Brenora asked,
What do your instincts say, Lieutenant? She is right, he said without hesitation. She is right, and this is our best chance at survival.
You can always count on me to do what is best for my own survival, Rin said, kneeling by Varus's side and beginning to wipe at the marks on Serafina's hands and legs.
Why isn't she waking? And what are these?
He demanded, pointing at the puckered skin he had found covering Seraphina's shoulders and wrapping around her chest, scars that followed the pattern of the writing.
Did she?
They're mother's marks, Rin said, in an almost reverent whisper. Old scars from the last time she accessed her power.
The last time? Someone did this to her before?
Varys, listen, Rin said, her voice like a whip as she held his face between her hands. I can feel your fear and your anger and your need to act. There's a lot to be angry and afraid of tonight, but there is nothing for you to do here. Seraphina will wake, but it will not be because you panicked and lost focus. What she needs from you now is to keep this circle clear. Do you understand me?
He looked down at Seraphina, at the scars she worked so hard to hide, at the blood matting her hair and her cheeks that had gone hollow. The light had grown now, a constant presence that wrapped her body in iridescent ribbons.
Don't leave her,
he snarled, rising to his feet. Varys looked out past the line of fire to the fight that waited for him. He could see the remaining Mushant the Nuit pacing. He could feel their hunger, and it matched his own. He felt the rage that fueled him, felt it devouring the power that coursed through this room. Purple light licked at his heels as he shifted his weight and thought about Seraphina. Pictures of her lifeless body pressed into his mind. She hung limp from the post at his back, skin fading from a deep green to a pale sage, and finally flaking away to ash as the rift opened up behind her. He wanted to back away from that image, wanted to turn and run to the woman behind him, wanted to hold her face again, run his fingers through her hair, smell her honeysuckle scent. But that was not what was needed now. So he stood there and let the rage push itself into his bones. He didn't wait for the flames to drop. He was tired of waiting. He ran, launching himself over the fire and onto the neck of one of the dogs. It crumpled under his sudden weight, bones snapping as it fell. Varys brought down his sword on the creature's neck and in one decisive movement severed its head from its body. Something rammed into his shoulder, sending him flying across the room, weapon clattering to the floor. The second beast and all its claws were on top of him, pinning him to the ground with one giant paw snapping at his neck with its teeth. Varys strained against the marchant, grabbing onto the monster's tusks, trying to force it back. They roared at each other as they pushed against one another, both caught in a stalemate of strength. Varys's hands began to bleed, and his palms became slick. His grip weakened, and teeth slipped ever closer to his throat. A strength he had never known gripped his collar and flung him out of the monster's clutches. Claws shredded his shirt and ripped his chest as he was thrown back, and an angel of fear and righteous fury stood between him and the beast. The robe Seraphina wore was dirty and torn, blowing around her knees in little wisps. Heat and power had eaten away at her, sharpening her body and face, and her skin burned with living copper, the scars on her shoulders, back, and arms looking like wings of fire.
Do not touch him,
she hissed in a voice like branches scraping against glass. Varys scrambled for his sword and joined her, shoulder to shoulder, to face down the beast. Silently they circled the dog, boxing it in, pushing it back towards the flames. When its death came, it came swiftly. The Marchant the Nuit lunged at Seraphina's legs. She planted her toe and pivoted out of its grasp. Then, light as a feather, she turned and delivered a brutal kick to the creature's snout, driving it back into Varys's waiting blade. Down he cut, down through brain and eye and jaw and muscle, spilling ichor around their feet. Brenora let out a cry of frustration, and before Varys could even turn his head, Seraphina was flying to her side. They sliced through the rows of bodies, tossing aside men and women like sacks of flour in their haste. The thralls were weakened, Varys could tell. He could feel Trevok and Wren's working already taking hold,
feel the power being drawn to the center of the room, feel himself being pulled down that waterfall. And still the servants fought, faltering and falling apart as the magic left them, but they were still there, still driven by someone else's determination. The witch was still kneeling over her father's corpse, reaching down the severed throat with one hand, thrusting the other palm towards the sky. Lightning burst from her fingers, and the air began to hum as Lithril took her last stand. Seraphina shrieked, a sound like an eagle diving after its prey, and ran forward. Without thought, Varys was chasing after her with all the speed and strength his gods and his body had ever given him. He leaped over fallen men and dodged clumsy attacks, the air buzzing around him, light and power and strength flowing over his skin like water. Then he felt Trevok's spell snap into place. Varys did not see the circle close, but he heard it. The final rune slammed down like thunder slamming into rock. He found himself fighting against an invisible river trying to sweep him back. Seraphina was fighting against the same current, struggling against the wind, feet slipping on stone. Ahead of them, Lithril clung to the rock at her back, her blue robes flapping around her like waves on the sea, hair blowing across her face, her eyes streaming red tears as she held her free hand to the sky and gave every last drop of whatever she had to the forces she had failed to summon.
Lithril, stop!
Varys yelled over the winds. The princess continued to snarl. Her skin started to crack.
It's over! Stop!
He boomed. Blood flowed from her nose, eyes, and mouth, turning her perfect smile red. And still she pushed, giving her life to something that would never give her anything in return. Cracks started in the wall, and Varys felt the ground shift under his feet. She would bring the cave down on them all, bring all of Altair down if she had to, but one thing was clear, she would not stop. The princess's face snapped up to the sky, her mouth opening wide, releasing a shriek of pain and regret and failure that she wouldn't accept. Another cry answered her song, a horrible harmony, as Seraphina was on her at last. She came at Lithril like a battering ram, grabbing her by the shoulders and slamming her into the wall again and again. The wind stopped, the servants collapsed to the floor, Lithril's screams died away, and still Seraphina howled as the cave shook.
Seraphina,
Varys tried.
Seraphina, stop. Stop, stop!
He put one hand on her shoulder and the other on the rag doll pulp that had been the princess. She shook and screamed as he held her in place, still in the grip of rage and fear, and then she was sobbing.
No,
Varys heard Seraphina gasp as the copper fire left her skin and her eyes began to take in the scene.
No,
she repeated, pulling away, putting blood-stained fingers to her lips. Her knees buckled, and then she was on the ground, weeping and wailing as if pain was a sickness she was trying to purge from her body. He took her in his arms, holding her tight and rocking her like a child.
No,
she whispered as they rocked back and forth.
No.
You have been listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. And if you want to continue listening, that option is now available to you. Thought Thief is now available as an audiobook for free to all patron subscribers, as well as for purchase on all major listening platforms. Thought Thief is also available in paperback and ebook. Links to where you can purchase all of these things can be found in the episode description below and on my website, kepreston.net. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review or even sharing this with a friend. Thought Thief is recorded and edited by me, K.E. Preston, with editing help from Hanson Lyman and Mark Gardner. Thought Thief is a work of fiction by K.E. Preston, with developmental editing and linguistics help from Amanda Berry. Thought Thief is a Lit Lab production. Thank you for listening.